The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. We've got Craig Burley, Shaka with his third straight start in the starting lineup here on ESPN FC. And joining us from Ibiza, we've got Luis Garcia as well.
Ibiza,
yes.
Holy smokes. Straight out
there. Guys, good to see you.
Yeah. He's came straight from the bar and he's gone back straight to the bar.
Yeah, it's all right for some, isn't it? Listen, Craig, he's joined us today for one reason, as so many others have. It's because everybody's waiting to hear what you've got
That's
to say
I'm in.
About Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's new contract.
Well, I'm not really too fussed about them. I mean, I'm neither here nor there. I just don't understand. I heard what Mark Ogden said about it and about the length. But I just don't quite have my head around why the rush to give him a new contract. Because, listen, let's see how the season goes if you're a Man United and then you're not tied yourself down. You know, if Jurgen Klopp or Pep Guardiola or Thomas Tuchel or Julian Nagelsmann or any of these guys put themselves on the market, listen, they're getting snapped up by one of the elite clubs straight away. In fact, they're probably going to sack a manager to get one of those guys in. Tell me who's going to take Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's not like Man United were going to lose him if they don't give him the contract, because Juventus don't want him, Real Madrid don't want him, Bayern Munich don't want him. City, Liverpool, Chelsea, none of the other teams want him. The only people that want him are Man United. So I don't understand why United had to go out and give him a three-year deal. They're locked into that now, and that's their decision. But I didn't see what the rush was, because guess what? Nobody else out there, if you're talking about the real elite clubs, are looking for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a manager.
But on the flip side, is there nobody else out there for Manchester United right now? And have they hurt themselves by giving him such a, well
relatively there are people out there that are better than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I don't know whether they would, you know, for example, Brendan Rodgers at Leicester City. And there are others. Now, how readily available they are, I don't know. But what's the rush? 6 months into the season coming up, they could have weighed up how it was going, good or bad, and gave him a contract. He wasn't going to walk out on Man United because he's got nowhere to walk to. So I don't, apart from keeping everybody sweet and everybody happy, and that's what Man United seem to want to do, don't upset the apple cart anymore. Solskjaer runs a clean dressing room, keeps his press conferences clean, doesn't bang the drum about signings too much. This whole thing just seems to me very comfortable for everybody.
To that point, Key, I mean, saying that there's nobody else out there for Manchester United, there's nobody else out there right now. But you don't offer somebody a 3+1 deal because there's nobody available right now. If you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's representative, his agent, it's a really poor position to be walking into a negotiation and saying, well, there's nobody else out there. That can't be the selling point for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Solskjaer has done well. He could do a whole lot better. Fine. But to Craig's point, not only are there no elite clubs in the market for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I can't see what even Premier League clubs, if somebody decided to sack their manager, let's say in November, somebody's struggling in the league, as we always have, manager gets sacked, there's nobody calling Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's representative saying, well, you're out of contract in a year. How about if you come and join our club? There's nobody doing that. So I don't know who Manchester United are trying to stave off, who they're trying to better.
They're not staving anybody off. It's not like they've got a Pochettino on their hands and, you know, Real Madrid are looking, or they've got, you know, one of these elite level managers and they're going to go somewhere else. We're going to lose them to Real Madrid or Barcelona or Bayern Munich. It's not going to happen, right? So they didn't have to rush in. I saw a tweet yesterday and this sums it up. I'm going to name them. It's ESPN UK Twitter account, right? They're named and shamed at the moment. And I know Lewis is waiting patiently. But it came out with drivel like this. Since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been in charge, Only Man City and Liverpool have got more Premier League points. Is that not the point? They're your rivals. They're your biggest rivals. And so, well, I mean, that's ludicrous to say. Well, here's where we're judging myself. Our two biggest rivals have done better than us since his time in charge. How does that stack up?
Well, he said since signing this that they're ready now to take the next step. And obviously,
well, as I said to our colleague, Yana Gafyotov, who's going to have a very good season or a very bad season, depending on what happens here, there's no place to hide now. And he was angry because he said, well, who's been hiding? I'm saying, look, there's been some sort of protection from elements of the media and elements of his former colleagues in the media. There's no doubt about that. He's been shielded to an extent. With all the potential new signings, that should go away, apart from one or two cheerleaders that go out there and are just not going to say anything bad. So he knows that as a manager himself. But I personally just don't understand the need to give somebody who's not on the radar of any other big clubs a three-year deal and rush into it. I just didn't see the need to do that at this moment in time.
On the radar for Manchester United, though, and it looks to be a deal that's going ever closer, is Rafael Varane. It seems that the terms are agreed. Now the two clubs are just trying to negotiate the price. What do you make of this signing for Manchester United, Luis, Rafael Varane?
Well, if at the end, finally, we think that it's going to happen, Rafael Varane has been trying to maybe make a move for quite a few times, but it was difficult to leave Real Madrid, as you know. And finally, it looks like he wanted to come to Premier League. So it's a big signing, to be honest. He's one of the best centre-backs that you can see right now in Europe because he's quick. He's got a lot of experience. He arrived very young to Real Madrid. He had next to him one of the best centre-backs in the history, Sergio Ramos. So he's been quite in his shape for many, many years, but definitely the ones we've been watching Real Madrid every single weekend, we can know that he's one of the best ones. And definitely if he arrived to a league where the intensity, the quick transitions are the main factor for winning a game, this is one of the best players you can have because definitely he's very fast, he's quick, he's very good in the air, also can give you goals in set pieces. He's well set at the back, so he knows how to move, even though that he's not quite a leader. But I guess that in Manchester United at the moment, they are trying to find that kind of player, a leader who can lead this team to finally get a big trophy.
So you say that, Jadon Sancho's in. With Rafael Varane in, does it make them title contenders, Luis?
Yeah, definitely, yes. I mean, with the team that they had last year, we kind of forget. It's true that it wasn't enough because Man City did very well, but they had a fantastic players. As you can see, there are not going to be many changes. You can see one, two, maybe three players if they can sign another one. But with a big players at the back, as a centre back, that is very important if you want to be a big contender, to be well organised at the back. And a player like Sancho, that you know that he can break any single defence, I think this is a team, of course, is going to be a contender to win the Premier League.
Luis says the title contenders, do you agree?
Well, they should be, and they have to be. A club of that size, they've always been generally up there challenging. That's their aim, not to finish second, third, fourth, and try and pipe that off as some sort of success. I still think they need a real dominating midfielder. McTominay's done well, but you know, I think over the course of the season, I still think they need a real dominant leading figure in there. I do agree on the Varane thing. He's a terrific player, super fast, great in the air, not the best on the ball, but then Harry Maguire is very good at coming out with the ball, and I think those two could complement each other. But yeah, I mean, as good as the other three, I'm not sure, but should they be putting up a title challenge like all these other clubs, the elite? Then yes, they should.
Does the move make sense for you, for United, Rafael Varane?
Absolutely. Rafael Varane is one of the best centre-backs in world football. You have an opportunity to get him, you take it. If you're Manchester United, no question. That has been a weaker point for them for quite some time. And that starting 11 is a very good starting 11. Let's make no mistake about that. Which kind of puts the pressure back on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about where Manchester United finish this season. And while second is a decent finish, I don't think it's all make or break whether Manchester United win the title. What I will say is they have to be in the conversation through the end of April. chasing down those Man City and Liverpool. You cannot be an also-ran by the end of February.
So what's success for them then next season?
I don't think that Manchester United would win the title. But if you are 4 or 5 points behind top, I'll even go a little further. So let's say 8. If you're in that conversation towards the end of the season, I'm saying that's real progress. But if come the start of March, you're already 10 or 12 points behind City or Liverpool or whoever's top of the table, and the discussion becomes finishing second and finishing top four, there's no discussion about finishing top of the table, then that simply is not good enough, especially when you look at that starting 11.
Yeah, I agree to that point. If you try to gauge success, you're looking at cup competitions, but you're looking at a league challenge over 38 games. And what you're looking at, as Shaq said, is absolutely correct. If you think back to Liverpool, the year before they did win the title for the first time in, 30 years or so, it was a neck and neck race with City, almost to 100 points. I mean, there's been a lot of football played. I can't remember everything exactly chronologically correct. But I think the year they won the Champions League, they went head-to-head with City all the way.
Yeah.
And just got pipped at the end. And that was a very success. That was a great effort. And then next year they came back and they went again and City dropped off. If that's how it's going to be for United, then I think we could sit here and give them a pass. As Shaka said, if they were in the hunt right to the end and there was 2 or 3 teams. But if they're sitting there looking up at everybody else and they're not in it, then I think that's a big problem for this football club. Bearing in mind where they've set the standard over the years. I mean, Ferguson didn't win every title. But generally, they were always...
They
were kind of always in the conversation, although they were winning it. That's where they need to be, not sitting in third or fourth, looking at, say, it's going to be Liverpool or City or Chelsea or one of them. It's going to be close. 2 or 3 of those teams fighting it out whilst they're outside the party. Not acceptable.
Well, let's talk about a player who's just left the Premier League. It's Gini Wijnaldum. And he was not feeling the love at Liverpool, saying if Liverpool lost, he was the one to blame. He said there was a moment where I was like, wow, if they only knew what I was doing to stay fit and play every game. So obviously there were fans suggesting he didn't do his best for Liverpool after he didn't get the offer that he wanted, but that was on social media, so it's not the fans in the stadium that he'd be talking about. Anyway, Jamie Carragher's come back and said, I love Gini, but this is not right. Social media is a circus and every club has clowns. Turn off your notifications, and if it's bothering you that much, delete the app. He wanted more money. The club said no. That's football. What do you make of this situation, Craig?
It's hard to disagree with what Carragher has said there. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I had a Chelsea fan say to me at the stadium, I hope you die. I was like, you know, some people are very irrational, and particularly now we have these social media platforms. Not everybody, but a big proportion are irrational people who will say anything. And I don't understand, if I was a Premier League footballer now, I don't think I would be using my social media to an extent where I was going home and looking at it at a weekend. Because that's going to just play on your mind. Because even if you have a decent game, there's always going to be, particularly for these high-profile players, there's always going to be 1,000 or a couple of thousand notifications, and some of them are going to be near the mark. And switch it off and forget about it. You know, Gini Wijnaldum did great for Liverpool. I don't remember him mentioning anything about social media accounts when he was banging goals in from the middle of the park. I wouldn't be blaming that, to be honest.
Luis, you were feeling the love at Liverpool. What have you made of this situation and what Wijnaldum said?
Well, I guess that I can understand, because when you are there in the dressing room having injections, trying to be at 8-9 hours to try to be fit to play at the weekend, and suddenly you don't perform well and then you receive the criticism on social media, of course, you can feel lonely, you can feel sad because of that kind of support that you are not expecting from your supporters, but it's going to receive the same to any team that he arrives. It's going to be in Paris Saint-Germain. It's true that Liverpool is a global, massive brand around the world, so you're never going to have everybody happy. But it's on social media. I mean, you can cut it. I remember when we were playing for Atletico Madrid, the guys who were not happy arrived to the training ground and tried to fight with us. That's a different kind of support, and you have to understand because they are the supporters. So social media is a fantastic tool if you understand it. But if you know that you're never going to be 100% giving what the people is expecting from you. So some people is going to criticize. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you try to please everybody. There is no chance you please everybody. So you have to understand it, know how it works. And like Carla had said, if you are not happy, you can know always switch off and that's it.
It's easier said than done, though, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not easier said than done. You switch your notifications off to people that you can only follow or verified or whatever. And then you don't have to see all the guff and all the nonsense. But, you know, at the end of the day, the people giving abuse to high-profile people on social media are not real fans of the game, right? They're cowards. And once you understand that and accept that's who they are, they're just morons and cowards, then it's quite easy to just brush it aside. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I don't know about you, Shaq, but you know, in my time playing in the Premier League and playing in Scotland for Celtic, if this had been around, these platforms, I'm not sure I would have been engaging in. And people will say, well, you got to engage with your fans, but unfortunately, well, you don't have to engage with your fans, but unfortunately, there's a big majority out there that spoil it for the decent people.
Yeah. I struggle to engage now. Never mind when back when I was playing for that same reason, because you want to connect with your fans, but so many others who have different agendas hijack that. Hijack that discourse that you want to have with genuine fans for whatever reason. So for me, it makes absolutely no sense. Nor does Wijnaldum's statement, in all honesty. Listen, we are talking about social media here, and social media will make things up. When Liverpool lose, everybody doesn't target Gini Wijnaldum. They target every single player who played. They'll target some who didn't as a reason to why Liverpool lost. That's just social media. It really is not real life. And you cannot look at social media. You cannot follow social media and take any credence in what's being said. If you do, if it does affect you, and I accept because it affected me when I was on there more, then just switch off and just recognize it for what it is and don't invite that kind of negativity into your space. So I'm with Jamie Carragher on this one.
Meanwhile, we do encourage all of you on social media to send in your questions every day on Extra Time.
I won't see it.
You will see it if we read them out on
Extra
Time.
We will tell you.
And you can always catch it every day over on YouTube.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Just 19 days until La Liga kicks off on ESPN, and we are focusing on every club in the top flight. And today it is Celta de Vigo, who finished eighth last season and will open their campaign against the defending champions, Atletico de Madrid. So let's talk a little bit about Celta for those of you who'd like to know more about this club. If you're looking for a team that you'd like to support in La Liga, this is one that maybe you should turn your attention to. So let's start, Luis Garcia, by talking about Euro Celta, the Celta of the late 90s and the early 2000s, who really made a splash in world football.
Definitely, with those players, Mostovoy, Carpin, Massinho, what a player Massinho he was, Gustavo Lopez, the striker, were one of those amazing teams that they show us how to play football with an attractive and way of attacking back in the 90s, and that fantastic rivalry that they got against Deportivo de la Coruña, another of those teams from the north west of Spain. Yes, love it. We miss a little bit of those moments because Celta Vigo is being built to try to get the European positions. But in the past few years, they struggled so much, almost getting to the relegation spots. But definitely one of those teams that you want to watch because from the past couple of maybe 3 months before the beginning of the season, they start showing a beautiful way of playing with Eduardo Caudet, the manager from last year, from 2020.
Yeah, obviously you mentioned what happened with Euro Celta, we saw relegation, promotion again. But it is hard to talk about the current day Celta without talking about its spiritual leader. This is a match made in football heaven, Iago Aspas, and everything that he's done for that side and everything that club means to him, Luis.
One of the top Spanish strikers from the past, as you can see, many years. I mean, every single year kind of surprised us all. Last year, struggled a lot with a couple of injuries. Couldn't manage to maybe raise the standards of the year of 1918 with those 20, 23 goals. But definitely is one of those special strikers. He's always on the move, fantastic quality with the left foot, always from the right side. And he can finish with the right, but he's definitely a fantastic left-footed. The combinations with the striker as Nolito, Bryce Mendes, or even Denis Suarez, that is the playmaker of the team, make this a very special player. I was surprised this season that he didn't make it to the national team to play for the Euro, because definitely everybody here in Spain, we were waiting to see him with the national team. Fantastic player, definitely one to watch for next season.
Yeah, you and many others, especially with goals being needed. The Messi of Moana, they call him, which is a little town across the river from Vigo. But I did love that he once said, yeah, Messi's a Lamborghini and I'm just a Golf. In terms of the club, though, and you mentioned there's a rivalry with Deportivo La Coruña. So obviously, if you're picking this club, you'll have a rivalry to look at. But what a region it is to visit in Galicia, and some of the best mariscos you're going to find. The seafood up there is divine. Divine, isn't it, Luis?
It's just fantastic. I was there not long ago, 3 weeks ago, making the Camino de Santiago. So I finished in Santiago de Compostela to watch the cathedral with the family. 118 kilometers I walked, and every single way I was stopping to try to have a little bit of these octopus specialties that they do over there. That is just delicious. El pulpo de a la gallega, that they call it. Fantastic way of visiting La Coruña, Celta Vigo. It's a beautiful city, a lot of monuments that you can go to watch with the cathedral. And that you were mentioning, that rivalry between Deportivo La Coruña and Celta, that we cannot see it for quite a while because Deportivo La Coruña is right now at Second Division B.
Yeah, obviously that will be not too upsetting for Celta, but they do love that rivalry, of course, so maybe they'll miss them in the end. I tell you one thing I do remember, it was my first ever away trip when I was covering La Liga, and it was the season that they were battling relegation, and ultimately they did go down. It was 06-07, and one thing that stood out to me, and I wonder if this is just all across Spain that you'll see this, but particularly in this region, was how superstitious they were. It just seemed that so much was built on myths and legend, and obviously you're talking about legendary walks as well that you can make there. But all the fans had brought little trinkets to the stadium in the hope that they could help their team stay up. So is superstition a bit stronger up in that region?
I guess that the megas, they call it, the fairy tales that they are over there. They are kind of linked with it, and they live every single day with trying to give something back because they are very superstitious. So when they kind of have a big or important game, you can see a lot of them with those long necklaces, with the crosses, with some stamps that they go there, the people they support or the people that they want to show something, and they pray for it to try to get something from that game. It's quite special to see it. They also make special drinks for those special games. So definitely it's a place that you want to visit. And yes, don't be surprised if they suddenly they start praying because they want their team to score a goal.
Yeah, a brilliant team to get behind, brilliant players in it, and great to talk about Celta with Luis Garcia. It will be 18 days until kickoff tomorrow, and we'll be focusing on Villarreal. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Euro 2020 may be a not-so-distant memory right now, but with Luis Garcia on the show, we simply must revisit it because his bracket would have impressed even Pulpo Paul, rest his soul. This is his predictions after the group stages. He had Italy and France in the semis, England and Netherlands in the semi-finals, all right. But final, Italy against England. Not bad at all, Luis.
And Italy winning, I have to say that, put it that way. A little bit, I received so much criticism when I showed that bracket. All my colleagues were mentioning that how Italy, against who did they play before, that they were not good enough, but I don't know why. I thought that a good defense, a good team defending, and the way that they were working on the field, I just enjoyed it. And I always thought that England had a fantastic team from the very beginning. It's true that they struggled on some parts during the Euros, but at the end, well, they were there and they had the chance of winning it. It was a pity, but Italy, I think, well deserved winning the trophy. Yeah.
He thought France and the Netherlands would go further, though.
Yeah, well, most of us thought France would go further. I'm not sure about...
Hold on. Jan keeps going on about he's the only one who picked Italy. And so he's not...
That was before the tournament. This was after the group stages.
Okay, don't cover for him.
Well, listen, I don't think we should argue about it. We got the right result in the end because England didn't win.
And, as a Scotsman, that's all that mattered.
As a Scotsman,
yeah, said, like a true Scotsman.
But Italy were thoroughly deserving, as we know. They had a great tournament. And
The dark horse is Italy.
Well, they were dark horses in the end. Yeah, not anymore.
Shaka, how did you do? Can you remember yours after the group? Can you remember your bracket in the predictions? We can.
Is it? I guess I didn't do so well.
You got the Netherlands going all the way to the final.
Yes, I did.
And France. Fair enough. Most people picked France even before it.
Well, that wasn't very good, was it?
No, it wasn't, Shaka. It wasn't great at all.
I'm not sure what else I can say to that.
As people on social media would say, you should be fired from this show.
Oh, man, they keep blaming me. They keep blaming me on social media for Liverpool losing.
We're not showing you. Maybe
no, I didn't do one.
There you go.
I don't think I did. I'm not sure.
Had you had it, though, no doubt you would have got it completely right all the way after the group stage.
Yeah, he would have had England going out in the group stage.
Oh yeah, it would have
I had England down as England down as my flops of the tournament, which actually they didn't win it, so that's
that's all right.
Technically, that's a flop.
Well, you know who does have the receipts is YouTube, and you can get more bonus content every day if you do subscribe to ESPN FC on YouTube. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Earlier in the show, I think I confused a few by mentioning Pulpo Paul and saying rest in peace. Paul the Octopus, that was what the Spanish called him, and the reason the Spanish were so obsessed with him is because he correctly predicted them as 2010 World Cup winners. So there you go. Pulpo Paul garnered worldwide fame in the 2 years that he lived, but is no longer with us.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest.
May he rest on a menu somewhere.
That's not very nice, Craig. Listen, stick around with us for extra time. We'll be talking Stevie's hair, Shaka's favourite ice cream. He might even bring it onto the show.
And calamari.
And calamari. And Craig will tell us about the manager he had a run-in with. You must not miss it.
Yeah. One of the managers.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Craig, Shaka and Luis Garcia with you. Before we do get your questions, we have to raise your attention to something that's been put on Twitter by Dan Thomas. And I did show this. It's a text from Stevie Nicol. And it says, disaster at the hairdressers. In fact, I showed this to Craig and he said, that's not Stevie. And then suddenly I heard a shout from the corner say, actually, that is Stevie.
That's what happens when you want pay for a proper haircut.
I can't wait to
He looks like a convicted felon who's just about to go to the gallows.
I love that he won't actually even show his own face. He's that ashamed.
I mean, look at the forehead.
I like little people.
You know what would make me laugh?
It's
that,
great.
You know what would make me really laugh if that didn't grow back at all?
I can't wait to see Stevie.
The sad thing is he's off for a little while now, so we're not going to be able to see how long.
He's back tomorrow.
A couple of days. Tomorrow.
Perfect.
Well, I don't know if he's working tomorrow, but he's back tomorrow.
He'll be back this week.
He's working tomorrow.
I can't tell you, he's on the tee sheet at golf. So I know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you'll let that one go by quietly. All right, let's get your questions.
I mean, wear a hat, won't he?
Not on the show, surely. No, he can't. Craig, Huncho says, could even Craig win the league if he was manager of Man City after they add Kane and Grealish, or would he bottle it?
Who bottle it, Kane and Grealish?
You.
No, you. You as manager.
No, it's not as easy as you think. So I'm going to say no.
You wouldn't win the league with them?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
All right, very modest. Reject Singh, Seti.
These guys do some really good work, these coaches. It's not just as it's not just as simple as some supporters think.
I'm sure like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would agree with that.
Yeah, well, he's done really well. He's got a new 4-year deal, Shaq.
3+1
to stave off the big fish.
All right, Reject Singh Sethi says, Shaka, if you were in Mbappe's shoes, what would you do?
Run
down the contract and leave PSG as a free agent, or stay at PSG? Also, if a big player like Kylian decides to leave a club for free, how healthy is it for both club and player's reputation?
If I were Kylian Mbappe, I'd see out my contract and move to Real Madrid at the end of it. I don't think seeing out your contract and leaving, even a big club like PSG, going to another big club like Real Madrid, does any damage at all to any of the three parties involved. And that's been a part of the game since going back to about, what, 98, 99? Yeah, that's about 98, 99. I mean, that's part of football.
Alamin, this is for you, Luis. Should Liverpool fans be worried this season on the goal drought, which happened last season among Mane, Firmino and others? No notable goal-scoring options out of the front three.
No, I don't think so. I think that from last year, the difference is 15 goals, around that, 15, 17 goals, the difference between the year they won the Premier League and this year. And I have to say that, this year you could see the Mane hasn't been in the best shape at scoring goals, but Salah has been outstanding once again. Firmino a little bit low, but this year with Jota, Minamino, players who can add a little bit more at the front three goal scoring, I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to be back with that good precision to score goals like we've seen before.
Do you think that was a bit of an anomaly that they weren't scoring like last
season? Well, I wouldn't be too concerned. I'd want my front three to be firing in all cylinders, but I think where one of the big problems is, and we discussed this midway through last week when somebody put the potential Liverpool team up, and the midfield was Jordan Henderson, Thiago and Fabinho. And last year it was evident to me, forgetting the problems at the back, they were not getting enough goals from midfield. And I look at that midfield three at the moment, and there's no goals in it. You know, Henderson's a worker, Thiago's a passer, and Fabinho's a really good reader of the game who can play centre-half or defensive midfielder. But you really need goals from the middle of the park. And if you look at Man City last year, Gundogan had his best ever goal-scoring season. Domestically, he was fantastic. And at times when games were tight, he popped up with the goals, as Wijnaldum has done for Liverpool generally. And I do think Liverpool will need to address that aspect of the game, because you can't always rely on the front three. It's like when your striker's having a bad time. Striker's having a bad time, Harry Kane's having a bad time, Aguero's having a bad time, whoever it is. Then you need the Gerrards of this world, the Gundogans, the Lampards in their heyday, who all got, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 goals per year. And that really took the pressure off some of the front lines. I think that's one of the things I look at with Liverpool and think, right, if they're having some issues up front, who is going to score the goals from the middle of the park? And we'll see how that pans out.
All right. Yuri Shaka says, does a pre-season embarrassment really affect the team, or do you just shrug it off because it is pre-season?
Shrug it off. It's pre-season. I mean, that's generally the approach, especially early in pre-season. That's not an issue. When I played pre-season, and especially early on, you want to work on specific things. Speaking from my perspective, I want to work on taking my crosses today, so I come for everything that's slung over. Whether I get there or not, doesn't bother me the next day at all.
Would it matter for Real Madrid, Luis, that Rangers beat them today?
Definitely a little bit, because to be honest, he's been very quiet on the transfer market. You can see when two of your centre backs are leaving the club, or potentially leaving the club, and you cannot find replacement that raise your level for next year, I'm sure that they're going to be worried a little bit. It's not because of the result, it's because what you're showing on the field.
Oh, your social media is going to be good tonight. You slurred Scottish football there. Oh, how can Rangers beat Real Madrid, Scottish champions?
But that's true, but in the way Real Madrid think, they have to beat everybody. The way that their fans think, you know?
Yeah, but we're only talking about the people that are going to tweet you later. Say, you have demeaned Scottish football again here tonight. Not me, nothing to do with me. I just sweep up, make the tea.
You know what you're doing?
You're just stirring the pot. Just separate yourself from everything so quickly.
Stirring it up.
I remember.
Unbelievable.
I remember after the year that we won the title at Celtic, and the following pre-season, we played Tottenham. And everybody's pre-season, this is where it's, everybody's pre-season starts at a different time. Mm-hmm. And we beat Tottenham 5-0 at Celtic Park. I mean, it wasn't a big surprise. We had a good side with the likes of Henrik Larsson and others, Paul Lambert. But we absolutely hammered them. It could have been 10. But we were 2 weeks away from starting the season, and they were, I think, a week into pre-season training. Mm. So there's always an excuse out there, but, you know, no excuse for... if Rangers had lost to Real Madrid, that would have been a disaster. My opinion.
Eric Graffer, Craig, what was the most heated encounter you ever had with another manager, and what was it over?
Oh, I had a really... I didn't have many heated with other managers. I actually had a bit of a running battle one day with the late, great Graham Taylor, former England manager, Aston Villa, Watford, and he was going apoplectic at me for kicking his players. And I love it. So, yeah, he was screaming at me, Graham. And I went on, I worked with Graham and for BBC Five Lives. He was a great guy, lovely, lovely guy, fantastic commentator and manager. But he lost it. He lost it. Burnley! Screaming at me. His face was like a tomato red. And I was winding him up. But never, ever. I mean, I've never came to blows with any managers. But I did have a screaming match with
I like how that's where you draw the line. I've never come to blows with any manager.
I almost came to blows with Glenn Hoddle once.
Really?
What happened?
He took me off. We were playing Tottenham, and we were beating Tottenham 4-3 at Stamford Bridge, and he decided to make a late substitution to run the clock down. Unfortunately, I didn't see it the same way. And when I come off, I threw an absolute strop, right? Of which one of the players told me that I better go and apologise to him after the game in the dressing room.
Did you?
And because I'm quite happy to eat humble pie, I did.
Oh.
Put my tail between my legs, and I went in and I said, I'm sorry, boss, that won't happen again.
And everything was okay?
What, were you apologising?
Sorry?
Well, you won't. You'll never apologise again. Is that what you meant?
I'm sorry, boss. That won't happen again.
Yeah, I'm sorry, boss. I'm never going to apologise to you or anybody else in life ever again.
I did. I went in. I was in the wrong. So I went in and apologised to Glenn just in case he dropped me the next week because he wasn't happy.
Fair enough.
Can admit when I'm wrong.
Can you?
It just doesn't happen often.
Yeah, just comes 30 years after. Just 30 years later, I tell everybody I was wrong.
Jackie, did you ever have a run-in with a manager?
No.
Luis?
No. Yeah, I had once in Mexico because he took me all out of the game at 32 in the first half, and I wasn't happy.
Oh, no,
I was already 35 years old, so I got my experience. I always treat him very well. We had a good relationship. The week didn't work out as we planned, and we were losing 2-0 at the same time, and I play as a striker, so it wasn't my fault at all, or at least all of it, and I think it wasn't the right change, and I went to have an argue at the same time.
Who was the manager?
Not happy. No, I can't tell that.
All right.
I don't want to mention his name. I'm so sorry.
All right, we'll find it.
I tell you, going back 32 minutes, that's early, but there was almost one that was going to beat that until the coach. I think I've told this story, but I'll tell it again because we'd like to regurgitate stuff on this show.
Go ahead.
So why not? At Chelsea, when Ruud Gullit was the manager, we had a left back called Scott Minto. Remember Scott?
Yeah, I remember Scott. I played with Scott at West Ham.
Terrific.
Right.
Good left back. Terrific left back. And he wasn't having a bad game, but the game had started badly for us. And Ruud Gullit wanted to make a tactical switch. And that tactical switch meant he was going to take Scott Minto off. Unfortunately, the clock hadn't even got to double figures.
Really?
I think it was coming up for 10 minutes.
Oh, cool.
And Graham Ricks, who was the coach at the time, apparently said to him, listen, we need to have a rethink here.
You know,
if we're going to change things, fine, but you can't take him off after 10 minutes or 9 minutes. Well, I mean, you'll absolutely kill him. Mm. He'll be dead. You know, his confidence will just go. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
Well, you couldn't explain that. You know, well, don't worry about it. It was only because I wanted to make a tactical switch. So, fortunately, Rixey talked Ruud out of doing that. Because that would have been...
I'd have
loved to have just sat back and seen the fight.
See what happened. That would have been early.
That would have been early.
On the same token then, maybe you will give us a name here, Luis. Who was the most underappreciated player you played with?
Underappreciated? I don't know. I had a few. I think Steve Finnan, the right one for Liverpool, he was an outstanding player, and he always went under the radar. Everybody praised him after because of 2005 final, but he gave so much during 4 or 5 years, I think he was in Liverpool, and he was an amazing player from the wide areas. He put a lot of good crosses, scoring goals. He was an amazing player for us during those 3-4 years that he was there. So I think Steve Finnan was one of the best ones.
What about you, Shaka?
I'm going to go for two defenders. At Newcastle.
Peacock.
Correct.
Darren Peacock.
Correct. Darren Peacock. I think in a side of stars and in a team that wanted to attack, Darren Peacock was easily our best defender, which it didn't show itself because I was a team built to attack. I mean, everybody was just going forward. You had two other centre-halves in Philippe Albiol and Steve Howie were great passers of the ball, but Darren Peacock was just an out-and-out defender. And then at Portsmouth, very good friend of mine, Linvoy Primus, who seemed to have been on the transfer list every single preseason, but one of our most valuable players at the end of that season. Every single year was there. Incredible player and desperately undervalued by whoever was in charge.
Right.
Mm. I would say it would have been my time at Celtic. Chelsea, I think, was... No, not really. My time at Celtic was a guy called... and actually, he was the number two... he was the assistant coach for Yeoman for Denmark during the Euros. A guy called Morten Wieghorst. And Morten was a Danish international and he was a central midfield player like myself. And it was sort of myself and Paul Lambert got all the kind of... We kind of got the headlines and that and stuff along with Henrik Larsson and all these. But Morten Wieghorst was an amazing player. He was 6'3". Fast over the ground, a lovely touch, great technical ability. but never, I felt, wasn't it underappreciated by his teammates, but I always felt the supporters underappreciated actually just how good he was. And he was really, really a terrific midfield player. He was an international, but he didn't get, I think, the headlines that he should have done. Fantastic player, and he's now, as I say, he's now coaching the Danish national team.
So obviously doing pretty well there.
He's doing pretty well. I saw his hairline, and it's the same as everybody else's.
A Stevie's? Stevie's?
It's heading back the way. Stevie's hair, Stevie will have to brush his backside, won't he? That hairline.
That was a nice question from Kelly. Frank Leboeuf next says, Luis, what was your go-to skill you used as a winger to beat defenders?
The control. I think that it was the best thing because I wasn't one of those players who could do a lot of tricky things on 1v1s because I wasn't very big. I wasn't the fastest one or the most powerful one. So I used to try to arise always first to the ball and with that control get a advantage. So I think that I will say that controlling, I think, is one of the most important things on football, if not the most important. And sometimes we don't give the credit at those players. So just with the control, they pass players and, well, clear the scene for the rest of the players.
Last question is from Dan the Orange Man. Craig.
Wow.
Would you rather call managers by their first name?
No.
Watch a match of the Gold Cup?
No.
Or refer to Scotland as we? And I want a power ranking here. I want first, second,
ranking.
And third. Yeah.
Oh, right.
So what would you rather do of the three? Or you can go backwards if you want.
Well, I can always correct myself if I say we. So that's in it. That's in
now
it.
Now that's cheating. You have to call them we from now on in this would you rather situation.
All right, that's bottom of my list then.
Okay.
That's the one I don't want to do.
That's the one you want to do least.
Yeah, I don't want to be using the word we in broadcasting.
So that's number three.
Yeah. Well, that's the strongest. No.
Power rank. We go. All right, yeah, okay.
That's number one.
No, but it's the.
We go three.
That's in the power rank. Yeah, okay. But this is if would you rather. So what would you rather do first?
And then, unfortunately, I would then have to say I want to be watching. What way are we going here?
I don't know which way you go.
All right, we'll do it in power ranking.
Whichever way.
Confuse it, because the question is would you rather? But if we're to give a power ranking.
Rather.
Yeah, would you rather? So that means we.
What would out of that three, if you had to do one, which comes first? Which is the one you do?
Oh, watch the Gold Cup.
So that's
even though I think it's an absolute poxy competition with rank rotten teams in it, I'll upset anybody. But I'd force myself to watch it rather than say we or call a manager by his first name like I'm buddies.
And if you had to choose between calling a manager by his first name or referring to Scotland as we, which one would you go? Which one would you do?
You'd still call a manager by his first name, right?
No, I would probably say we.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
That was a good question, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that.
Made you think.
I don't like... Don's the worst.
Frank.
Frank.
Pep.
Frank.
Sisu.
Ollie. Don was... Ollie, Frank, Nuno
Fernandes. Oh, Nuno. Day. Yeah, well, Nuno was the one from the other week.
Nuno. Stevie G. That gets me. Stevie G. Stevie Gerrard. Stevie G. I mean, that's what you call them if you're on the training ground.
Maybe he's just best mates with them all.
Don hasn't got any friends. He hasn't got friends, right? He's a recluse. I tell you, I'm going to see the boss. I'm going to tell the boss, ask the boss, whenever anybody does this, there have to be some sort of sanction, financial penalty for calling people their first names if they're the manager or a player. How's that?
Even if you played with them or are friends with them?
No, we're not friends anymore. There's no friends here.
All right.
There's no friends. We're just ships passing in the night. We're not friends anymore. We're broadcasting. They're players, we're broadcasting. They're managers, we're broadcasting. We're not friends. There's no friends in this game.
All right.
Don't agree. See, that's the problem, I think, with TV now. There's too much friendship between
people.
They say, and it's too matey-matey.
I've not got a problem with that. I understand. Maybe it can sound a bit too pally and familiar sometimes.
No, it is. I have a producer in England. Text me and said, oh, it drives me nuts. Drives me absolute nuts.
It's hard not to, though, sometimes.
No, it's not hard.
Most people refer to Pep Guardiola as Pep.
No, I don't. It's Guardiola.
A lot of people do.
Guardiola.
Okay.
Call him Guardiola. Call him Klopp. Not Jürgen. He's not my friend.
I think there's just somewhere, sometimes it's easier to say the first name than it is the last
name. Well, get round it. Find a way around it. Are you going to get
Just out of interest then, Luis, what did you guys call Stevie G on the training field?
Oh, Stevie G.
Stevie, I guess.
He's now going to have to call him Gerard.
But now, by Craig's rules, you're going to have to call him Gerard.
No, it's not, because Luis is Spanish and the foreign guys are allowed to do what they want.
Oh, okay. No, there's rules and levels.
Certain levels.
And languages, apparently.
Don Hutchinson has to stop calling these managers with their first name.
All right. I want to end on everyone's favourite ice cream, which has been asked before, I think, but I watched yesterday's Extra Time, and I'm nodding away at the ice cream conversation, Checker.
Jenny's. Goat's cheese and red cherry. I brought some, okay?
I'll help you finish that.
Go on. You want me to go get it? Should I go get it?
Yeah. Craig.
Come, some ice and some spoons. We've got ice cream, look.
Craig, what's your favourite flavour?
I'm on a diet. Oh, I thought that was going to splatter.
You're on a diet.
There's a couple
of
spoons. There's some
chocolate.
Spoons up there. There's some spoons. It's a little bit melted now.
Is it melted?
Yeah. It was in the freezer.
Luis, what's your favourite ice cream?
Caramel.
Oh.
Vanilla with caramel.
Give me some of this.
Caramel ice cream. Sorry that you're in Ibiza, Luis. You lose.
Yeah, I can see that. You're enjoying it, huh?
Look at you. It's just a mess. Look, you're all over your nose. Okay, look. But it's good.
Don't need them now, do I?
It's good, right? It's grown-up ice cream as well. It's good.
I wouldn't have expected that to be as good as it is.
It's good.
Not bad.
Like, let me know next time. I'll get mine.
Where Craig says it's all right.
We'll send you some, Luis.
We'll send you some over right now.
Might be melted.
It's on its way,
Luis. By the time it gets to Ibiza. You're just going to have to enjoy Ibiza instead. We're going to go and enjoy this ice cream. So thank you so much for joining us on the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig's fuming that we're calling Jenny's ice cream by Jenny's first name.
Comes highly recommended.
Don't forget, ESPN FC is available daily. You can get it on ESPN+.